Hare Krishna. We welcome you to the most auspicious celebration of Sri Krishna Janmashtami, the appearance day of Lord Krishna. This year's Janmashtami celebrations are even more special because it is the 40th anniversary of the installation of the presiding deities here, Sri Sri Rukmini Dwarkadish. So we are observing Krishna's appearance in two ways, his appearance in his original form as Krishna about 5,000 years ago, and his appearance as his deity, Archa Avatar, 40 years ago. So I thought to honor the occasion by reading a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam about the deity form. And if there's time, I will read a little about Krishna's appearance in his original form. We read from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 25, The Glories of Devotional Service, Text 35. Please repeat. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Pashyanti te me ruchirani amba santa prasanna vatra aruna Lochanani, Rupani, Divyani, Varapradani, Sakam, Vacham, Sprihaniyam, Vadanti, Pasyanti te mi ruchirani ambasanta. Prasanna vaktraruna. Well, maybe I'll try a different tune. Pasyanti te mi ruchirani ambasanta. Prasanna vaktraruna lochanani. Rupani divyani varapradani. sakam vacham spri aniyam vadanti. Pashyanti te me ruchiranyam basanta. Prasanna vaktra runa lochanani. Rupani divyani vara pradani. Sakam vacham sprihaniyam vadanti. Pashyanti te me ruchiranyam basanta. Prasanna vaktra runa lochanani. Rupani divyani vara pradani. Sakam vacham sprihaniyam vadanti. Pashyanti. See. Te. They. May. My. Ruchirani. Beautiful. Amba. O Mother. Santa. Devotees. Prasanna. Smiling. Vatra. Face. Aruna. Like the morning sun. Lochanani. Eyes. Rupani. Forms. Divyani. Transcendental. Varapradani. Benevolent. Sakam. With me. Vacham. Words. Sprihaniyam. Favorable. Vadanti. They speak. Translation. O my mother, my devotees always see the smiling face of my form with eyes like the rising morning sun. They like to see my various transcendental forms, which are all benevolent, and they also talk favorably with me. Please repeat. O my mother, my devotees always see the smiling face of my form with eyes like the rising morning sun. They like to see my various transcendental forms, which are all benevolent, and they also talk favorably with me. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Mayavadis and atheists accept the forms of the deities in the temple of the Lord as idols. But devotees do not worship idols. They directly worship the personality of Godhead in his Archa incarnation. Archa refers to the form which we can worship in our present condition. Actually, in our present state, it is not possible to see God in his spiritual form because our material eyes and senses cannot conceive of a spiritual form. We cannot even see the spiritual form of the individual soul. When a man dies, we cannot see how the spiritual form leaves the body. That is the defect of our material senses. In order to be seen by our material senses, the Supreme Personality of Godhead accepts a favorable form which is called Archa Vigraha. This Archa Vigraha, sometimes called the Archa Incarnation, is not different from him. Just as the Supreme Personality of Godhead accepts various incarnations, he takes on forms made out of matter, clay, wood, metal, and jewels. There are many Shastric injunctions which give instructions for carving forms of the Lord. These forms are not material. If God is all-pervading, then he is also in the material elements. There is no doubt about it. But the atheists think otherwise. Although they preach that everything is God, when they go to the temple and see the form of the Lord, they deny that he is God. According to their own theory, everything is God. Then why is the deity not God? Actually, they have no conception of God. The devotee's vision, however, is different. Their vision is smeared with love of God. As soon as they see the Lord in his different forms, the devotees become saturated with love, for they do not find any difference between the Lord and his form in the temple, as do the atheists. The smiling face of the deity in the temple is beheld by the devotees as transcendental and spiritual, and the decoration of the body of the Lord is very much appreciated by the devotees. It is the duty of the spiritual master to teach how to decorate the deity in the temple, how to cleanse the temple, and how to worship the deity. There are different procedures and rules and regulations which are followed in temples of Vishnu. And devotees go there and see the deity, the Vigraha, and spiritually enjoy the form because all of the deities are benevolent. The devotees express their minds before the deity, and in many instances the deity also gives answers. But one must be a very elevated devotee in order to be able to speak with the Supreme Lord. Sometimes the Lord informs the devotee through dreams. These exchanges of feelings between the deity and the devotee are not understandable by atheists, but actually the devotee enjoys them. Kapila Muni is explaining how the devotees see the decorated body and face of the deity and how they speak with him in devotional service. I'll also read the next verse, which goes with the verse we just read. Text 36. Tayodarshaniya vayavarudara vilasahasekshita vamasuktai hritatmano ritta pranamscha bhaktir anichchatome gatimanvim payunti. Translation. Upon seeing the charming forms of the Lord, smiling and attractive, and hearing his very pleasing words, the pure devotee almost loses all other consciousness. His senses are freed from all other engagements, and he becomes absorbed in devotional service. Thus, in spite of his unwillingness, he attains liberation without separate endeavor. Purport. There are three divisions of devotees: first class, second class, and third class. Even the third class devotees are liberated souls. It is explained in this verse that although they do not have knowledge, simply by seeing the beautiful decoration of the deity in the temple, the devotee is absorbed in thought of him and loses all other consciousness. Simply by fixing oneself in Krishna consciousness, engaging the senses in the service of the Lord, one is imperceptibly liberated. This is also confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita. Simply by discharging uncontaminated devotional service as prescribed in the scriptures, one becomes equal to Brahman. In the Bhagavad Gita it is said, Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate. This means that the living entity, in his original state, is Brahman, because he is part and parcel of the Supreme Brahman. But simply because of his forgetfulness of his real nature as an eternal servitor of the Lord, he is overwhelmed and captured by Maya. His forgetfulness of his real constitutional position is Maya. Otherwise, he is eternally Brahman. When one is trained to become conscious of his position, he understands that he is the servitor of the Lord. Brahman refers to a state of self-realization. Even the third-class devotee, who is not advanced in knowledge of the absolute truth, but simply offers obeisances with great devotion, thinks of the Lord, sees the Lord in the temple, and brings forth flowers and fruits to offer to the deities, becomes imperceptibly liberated. Shradayanvitaha. With great devotion, the devotees offer worshipful respects and paraphernalia to the deity. The deities of Radha and Krishna, Lakshmi and Narayan, and Ram and Sita are very attractive to devotees, so much so that when they see the statue decorated in the temple of the Lord, they become fully absorbed in thought of the Lord. That is the state of liberation. In other words, it is confirmed herewith that even a third-class devotee is in the transcendental position above those who are trying for liberation by speculation or by other methods. Even great impersonalists like Shukadev Goswami and the four Kumaras were attracted by the beauty of the deities in the temple, by the decorations and by the aroma of tulsi offered to the Lord, and they became devotees. Even though they were in the liberated state, instead of remaining impersonalists, they were attracted by the beauty of the Lord and became devotees. Here the word vilas is very important. Vilas refers to the activities or pastimes of the Lord. It is a prescribed duty in temple worship that not only should one visit the temple to see the deity nicely decorated, but at the same time he should hear the recitation of Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, or some similar literature, which is regularly recited in the temple. It is the system in Vrindavan that in every temple there is recitation of the Shastras. Even third-class devotees who have no literary knowledge or no time to read Srimad Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita get the opportunity to hear about the pastimes of the Lord. In this way, their minds may remain always absorbed in the thought of the Lord, his activities, and his transcendental nature. This state of Krishna consciousness is a liberated stage. Lord Chaitanya, therefore, recommended 5 important processes in the discharge of devotional service. 1. To chant the holy names of the Lord. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. 2. To associate with devotees and serve them as far as possible. 3. To hear Srimad Bhagavatam. 4. To see the decorated temple and the deity. And, if possible, 5. To live in a place like Vrindavan or Mathura. These 5 items alone can help a devotee achieve the highest perfectional stage. This is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita and here in Srimad Bhagavatam. That third-class devotees can also imperceptibly achieve liberation is accepted in all Vedic literatures. So these 2 verses and purports are very relevant to us as devotees. Sometimes we might think that the descriptions of devotional service in the scriptures are exaggerated. But actually we see here in probably every day, but very vividly on festival days, that devotees become completely absorbed in the charming forms of the deities. And I'm sure we will see it during the Abhishek and again during the midnight Aarti. People just become so enthralled by the forms of the Lord that they forget everything else. And that absorption in Krishna consciousness makes them liberated. By definition, their absorption in Krishna consciousness on the Brahman platform makes them liberated beyond the modes of material nature. So there's no exaggeration in these descriptions. The challenge is how to maintain that consciousness. Is it that we're liberated when we come into the temple and become attracted by the beauty and mercy of the Lord, and then we walk out onto the street and gradually forget what we experienced in the temple and become absorbed in mundane activities? Well, the impression of the Lord on the mind of the devotee will always remain there. Even if temporarily the devotee forgets the Lord. Actually, the Lord's appearance is for our benefit, for our mercy. But we have to open ourselves to take the mercy. Like Srila Prabhupada said, the sun is there for everyone. But if someone stays in his closet, he won't get the benefit of the sun. It's not the sun's fault, but it's the person's fault. The sun is there. So in the same way, the Lord is always available to us. In fact, he is available to us in five very potent ways. One is sadhu sangha, the association of devotees. The Lord is available to us in the association of devotees. Devotees carry the Lord within their hearts. And devotees are always engaged in chanting the holy name of the Lord and discussing the transcendental topics of the Lord. And that chanting and hearing about the Lord invokes the Lord's presence. So sadhu sangha, nama kirtana, the chanting of the holy names. Krishna is not different from his holy name. He is identical with the holy name. And so when we chant the holy name, we have the chance to associate with Krishna. But again, just as we have to understand that the deity is Krishna himself and not some material object, we also have to understand that the holy name is Krishna himself and not some ordinary syllables. And Bhagavat Shravanam, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is the sound incarnation of the Lord. Krishna is present as Srimad Bhagavatam. And then the deity of the Lord, as we've discussed, and Mathura Vas, residing in a holy place, like Mathura or Vrindavan, or any place where the deity of the Lord is properly installed and worshipped. So these activities bring us in the association of the Lord, and by being absorbed in the Lord's presence, we forget everything else and we are liberated. So the challenge then is to always keep ourselves in the liberated position by always being absorbed in the Lord in one of these five methods or other methods. Now, someone may say, I have my wife, I have my family, I have my children. How can I always be engaged in these acts of devotional service directly? Well, of course, you can think of Krishna while you're engaged in your prescribed duties. As Lord Krishna tells Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita, yudhyacha smaranam, that engage in your duties, and his duties were to fight in the war, engage in your duties, fight, but remember me. So we can do any service, any duty, and think of Krishna while we're doing it. And that will make the activity perfect. As it is, when we engage in our duties, we usually think about someone or something else anyway. The man goes to work. He's on the job, in the workplace, but he's thinking, oh, at the end of the day, I'll go back home. I'll be with my family, with my wife and my children, and I will be happy. Or he might think, at the end of the day, I'll get together with my buddies, and we'll eat something, we'll drink something, and we will enjoy together. So as it is, when we work, we are thinking of someone or something else. So with the same effort, it's not even an effort, it's a natural function, but say with the same effort, one could think of Krishna. Now, sometimes one has work which is so demanding mentally that one cannot think of Krishna at the time. One has to think about the problem at hand. So then too, one's work can be accepted as part of the process of devotional service if the ultimate goal is to keep the body and soul together for serving Krishna. I mean, one is very absorbed in the work at hand. Sometimes one has to be absorbed in the work at hand, solving some difficult problem. But still, one knows that he's being paid for it. Somewhere in the back of his mind, he's conscious that he's being paid for it. He's not just doing it for free. So the payment that he receives, what is he going to do with it? If he uses it to keep the body and soul together so he can engage in devotional service, then that work is not outside of the process of devotional service. But if he's thinking, oh, I'm going to get so much money, and I can do this, buy this toy for my child. My child will be so happy and I will feel so good. Or I will buy this, whatever, nice sari for my wife. And when she sees it, she will be so happy and I will feel so glad. There's no limit to how we can spend the money on personal or family happiness, which we think will make us happy. So the real underlying, this word here, shraddha, shraddhayanvitaha, Rupa Goswami uses that word, Murti Shraddhayanvitaha, to serve the deity with faith. That is what makes a devotee, Shraddha, Ado Shraddha. That's what distinguishes a devotee from a Mayavadi or a Karmi. He has faith in Krishna. He has faith in the deity, that the deity is Krishna. And faith is further defined that he has faith in the process of devotional service, that just by engaging in devotional service to Sri Krishna, he will achieve everything. And this is a very important point. That by engaging in devotional service, one achieves the results of all other processes. One achieves the result of karma, jnana, yoga, everything. And with that faith, one can engage in devotional service. Now, faith, everyone acts on the basis of faith. What distinguishes a devotee is he acts on the basis of faith in Krishna and in the process of devotional service. But everyone has some faith. Even the ordinary man who works to get money to spend on his family, on his home, he has faith that by doing so, he will be happy. And therefore, a very essential element of developing faith, pure faith in Krishna and devotional service, is realizing that one cannot be happy by any other process or in any other relationship. Now this, of course, may be a little hard to take because we put so much effort into our other relationships. But if the other relationships are devoid of Krishna, they will ultimately end in misery. And quite often our relationships are mixed. There's some element of Krishna consciousness and some element of the hope that the relationship will bring me happiness. But those relationships they can bring a sense of happiness, but it's quite illusory because underneath it all there's lust and greed and selfishness and many other things that eventually come to the surface. They, you know, rear their ugly head and disturb the relationship. But apart from that, the relationships based on the body are temporary because the body is temporary. In my own experience, limited experience speaking with people, I don't think I've found anything more heartbreaking to someone than a broken relationship. Usually, a marital relationship or something that at least one party is thinking would be and should be permanent, and then the other party breaks it. I mean, people are just devastated. I mean, they can't eat, they can't sleep, they can't function. Can't function. And the other is the death of a child, when, especially a mother. When a mother loses a child, it is the most devastating, heartbreaking experience imaginable. So this, and this is the reality that most of us will face sooner or later. But, you know, as Prabhupada always said, if Krishna's the center, if we give our love to Krishna and put our faith in developing our relationship with Krishna, that relationship will never break. But that seems so remote. I mean, my wife, I can see my wife, I can see my child, I can feel my child. Krishna, we hear about him, but we've never seen him. We've never touched him. Never heard him speak to us. He's never kissed me. I mean, we're trying to compare two things, but yeah, okay, Krishna's eternal, full of bliss and knowledge, but it's theoretical. My wife, my husband, my children, my parents. Okay, we know they're temporary. Their bodies are temporary, but they're real. You know, we can talk to them, we can hold their hands, we can do things with them. They can keep us company when we want company. So this is our dilemma. And Krishna knows that we're conditioned. He knows that our pure senses are covered with material senses, and that we can only see and touch material things, or things that appear to be material. And so he comes in the deity form. And that service of taking care of the deity, shadayanvitaha, with faith, can really absorb us and satisfy us. And the Lord, he becomes dependent on his devotee. He becomes dependent on his devotee to wake him up, to dress him, to feed him, just like a child. It's sort of a human need to feel needed, want to feel needed. That's why. You know, we become so attached to our children because they need us. Even pets, they're dependent on us. So the Lord puts himself in the same position. Like, he needs us to wake him up. He needs us to dress him. He needs us to feed him. So we can have that very intimate and fulfilling and satisfying relationship with the deity. And sadhu sangha, devotees, but specifically more advanced devotees. In Rupa Goswami's definition of sadhu sangha, swajati ashaye snigde sadhu sangha swato vare. Swajati means like-minded. Like-minded. Should have the same mood of service. For the same deity, for the same worshipable object. Swajati ashaye snigde. And the sadhu should be affectionate to us. There may be many advanced devotees, but if we don't have a relationship with them, if they're not affectionate towards us or merciful towards us, then we won't get the same benefit from the relationship. So, swajati ashaye snigde sadhu sangha swatovare. Swatovare means he should be more advanced than we are. It's very important to associate with more advanced devotees. Now, this condition can be fulfilled if one has the proper mood. Actually, everything depends on the proper mood. But I'd like to recall one incident with His Holiness Satchinandan Swami when he went to Radhakund to observe a very severe Nam Vrat during Kartik. He didn't say exactly what his Vrat was, and in general, devotees are not supposed to say what their vows are, because then people will get impressed. Oh, you're chanting so many rounds, and then false ego will immediately become prominent and the whole purpose will be defeated. But he hardly had time to eat or sleep. I can say that much. But still, he was kind. He made a little time for us to speak during lunchtime, or a little before lunchtime. And we discussed this point of sadhu sangha, because there has been an idea, it's always there, it probably has always been there and is there now and always will be there, that to get sadhu sangha, to get more advanced association, one must go outside ISKCON, one must go out of the line of direct followers of Srila Prabhupada. You know, find someone older. Of course, we're catching up. But find someone older, someone, you know, more, you know, someone Indian, born devotee, no Sanskrit, whatever the criteria are. And Satchinandan Swami made the point that he didn't want to do that. He wanted his Krishna consciousness to come in the line of Srila Prabhupada. So that could come in the category swajatiya, like-minded. Swajati literally means like one's own caste, but it really means in one's same mood or spiritual family, say spiritual family. But then, you know, looking around, we're all more or less the same. You know, more or less the same age, more or less the same degree of learning in scripture and Sanskrit. You know, more or less the same in our daily routine of activities. So we're more like peers. But Satchinandan Swami said that, yes, externally we may be peers, but internally I'm thinking, well, actually the way he put it, he spoke of me. He said, externally we may be peers, but internally Giriraj Swami is thinking, Satchinandan Swami is more advanced than I am, so I can learn from him. And I want to serve him so I can develop his qualities and get his mercy, which is exactly how I was thinking. And then Satchinandan Swami said, and I'm thinking, but this was, I think, just for the sake of making the point. I don't take it as literally true. But he said, and Satchinandan Swami is thinking, Giriraj Swami is more advanced than I am, so I can learn from him, and I also want to serve him, and that will also help me. So, and that is actually the mood that Srila Prabhupada wanted us to have. That's why he said that we should address each other as Prabhu. Prabhu means master. That means I'm the servant. I serve the Prabhu. The Prabhu is superior to me. Therefore, I serve the Prabhu. And I learn from the Prabhu. But it should be a genuine feeling. Not, as Prabhupada said, not, oh, Prabhu, can you please bring me my slippers? That's not the meaning of Prabhu. So, in this way, we can really have sadhu sangha. We can really experience Krishna in a very tangible way in the association of devotees. And, of course, chanting the holy names and hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, directly Krishna, in the form of transcendental sound. And Mathura Vask, the holy dham, even the temple. Temple is a holy dham. Temple is also a holy dham. So by these activities we come in association with Krishna and we become imperceptibly liberated. Of course, we will not think we're liberated. In fact, Prabhupada said, anyone who thinks he's liberated is a rascal. So we're not going to think that we're liberated. But we can see that devotees, even if they're not very knowledgeable, they are liberated imperceptibly. That means they lose material attachment. And really just want to serve Guru and Krishna. Srila Prabhupada had a friend in Bombay named Dr. Patel. And every morning, without fail, Dr. Patel would come at 6 o'clock to accompany Srila Prabhupada on his morning walk on Juhu Beach. And they would discuss very interesting conversations. You can hear them. Well, when we first came to Juhu, we were living in very meager conditions, primitive conditions. And Dr. Patel, he was sort of a proud fellow. He had been educated in England. He was a medical doctor. He'd been educated in England. He knew Sanskrit. But I think his real, pride was that in spite of going to England and being educated as a medical doctor at a time when very few Indians were able to leave India and study abroad, he did it, but he didn't compromise his principles. You know, he remained vegetarian, you know, he didn't engage in any of this sinful activities. So, but he was very struck by the devotees coming from such rich country, America, and living in such humble circumstances. And we didn't really have any facilities. Most of the devotees were just sleeping on straw mats. And we didn't have mosquito nets, so a lot of devotees were getting bitten by mosquitoes and getting malaria. It was pretty basic, pretty meager. So Dr. Patel felt, I don't know, he was inspired by the devotees. He wanted to do something for them. So although he said he, in his whole life, he never begged anything from anyone in his whole life. He went to MJ Market, big cloth market in Bombay, and he begged cloth and cotton. And he put together 12 sets with a little mattress, a little pillow, a blanket, and a mosquito net for all the devotees. And gradually, if any of you have lived in an ashram, you know, gradually, one pillow disappeared, two blankets disappeared, and gradually, over a period of a year or two, Dr. Patel's hard-won gift to the devotees dwindled and dwindled and dwindled. And finally, there was one mattress and two mosquito nets, and then gradually they disappeared. There was not one thread of Dr. Patel's donation left. And Dr. Patel, he was a bit of... It's hard to tell. Sometimes he talked like an impersonalist. But whenever Prabhupada would accuse him of being a Mayavadi, he would say, "No, sir, I'm a Vaishnav." But he would talk like a Mayavadi sometimes. Sometimes he talked like a Vaishnav. So one morning, Dr. Patel brought up his donation to Srila Prabhupada. And he told the whole story, how he'd humbled himself and gone to MJ Market and begged all the supplies and had them stitched into mattresses and everything. And now nothing was left. and he was very upset. And Srila Prabhupada said, the reason there's nothing left of your donation is that the devotees, that my disciples, they don't identify with the body. They know I'm not the body, and it doesn't matter to them whether they're sleeping on a straw mat or on a mattress, whether they have a mosquito net or not, whether they have a pillow or not. It doesn't matter to them. As long as they can serve the spiritual master and Krishna, they are satisfied. And he said, that mukti that you are so eager to get, they already have that. They're already liberated. So, Srila Prabhupada's answer was very skillful. He exalted his disciples and at the same time humbled Dr. Patel. But he was making stating a truth. He was stating a truth that the devotees, they didn't care about those material things. They just wanted to do service. Now, one could say, well, that's a little naive. We know about Yukta Vairagya and taking care of things for Krishna, taking care of the paraphernalia and taking care of our bodies. But when we were that young, it didn't take that much to take care of our bodies. Now it takes a lot more. So we have to pay a lot more attention to the paraphernalia that we require to keep the body and soul together. But that doesn't mean that the spirit is lost. We hope the spirit is not lost. It just means that what it takes to keep the body and soul together now, what it takes to keep the body functioning, to serve Krishna, involves more than it did when we were 20 years old. But internally, that is the spirit, I hope in most cases, that is the spirit. We do it because we have to do it. But our real happiness is in Krishna consciousness, in serving Guru and Krishna. I had another verse and purport in mind, but we don't have time. We definitely don't have time. But what the other verse said was that the Lord appears in a human-like form out of mercy for his devotees so that they can become attracted to him and want to engage in his service. And Prabhupada often paraphrased that verse that the Lord descends to create subject matter for his devotees to chant and hear about him. So this word vilas, that the devotees discuss the Lord's pastimes in the temple, that is fulfilled, that is possible by the Lord's descending. So, Hare Krishna. Yes, Archita Prabhu.
Maharaj, thank you very much for such a wonderful presentation. So full of Krishna conscious information, enlivening. Thank you so much. The program is that Madhubhisa Prabhu will speak at 10:30 and followed by Rita Nandamaraj. So you do have time if you'd like to go on. But I do have a couple of questions if you don't mind. One regards this Dr. Patel. You're saying that I always wondered, did he become a follower of Prabhupada? Or you said he was a friend of Prabhupada. Did he know Prabhupada prior to Prabhupada creating ISKCON? In other words, was he a friend from the Prabhupada's business years? Or did he take an interest in ISKCON and then meet Prabhupada?
Yeah, he took an interest in ISKCON and then he met Prabhupada. And they became friends in the sense that they were like friends, that relationship. And after Prabhupada left, although they used to sort of quarrel, butt heads, but after Prabhupada left, he wrote a beautiful article about his relationship with Srila Prabhupada, which was published in Back to Godhead. And in this article, he told so many intimate things about their relationship. And according to him, Prabhupada said that in their past lives, they were brothers, because otherwise, how could they have become so intimate? And, you know, they were, I mean, Prabhupada, what you can't even say, but even Dr. Patel was like quite intelligent. So they would speak to each other. Prabhupada didn't know Gujarati and Dr. Patel didn't know Bengali. But the languages were similar enough that they used to discuss back and forth. Prabhupada would speak in Bengali and Dr. Patel would reply in Gujarati. So they had that sort of relationship. But sometimes they could really have explosive arguments. But that's also common among brothers. So, but yeah, I think there are people, it's odd, you know, there are people who are like devotees, but actually they're not devotees, they're more impersonalists. But there are also people who are like impersonalists, but underneath they're devotees. Like I think he was the chief minister of Bengal during the communist rule. His wife came to our temple in Calcutta. And, you know, the devotee said, well, we didn't expect to see you come to the temple. I mean, your husband's like the, you know, one of the biggest communists in the state, and I'm sure he wouldn't agree. And she said, don't tell anyone because it might hurt his political career, but he secretly worships Radha and Krishna. And at our first major public preaching program with Srila Prabhupada in Bombay, it was a sadhu sammelan, a convention of sadhus on Chowpatty Beach. So there was a really famous, one of the most prominent sadhus in India, coming in the line of Swami Shivananda. And openly, in front of thousands of people, Srila Prabhupada said that in public he will say, you know, Brahma Satya Jagan Nitya. But I know for a fact that privately he worships deities of Radha and Krishna. And it's true. It's true. So whether Dr. Patel was externally a Mayavadi but a devotee at heart, or externally a devotee or a Mayavadi at heart, but I think in the end, by Prabhupada's mercy, he became a devotee at heart. Oh, yes. That's true. Everyone is ultimately a devotee. That's true. They just don't know it. But still, as preachers, we're advised to distinguish four principles: the Lord, the devotees, the innocent, and the envious. And it's true, underneath everyone is a devotee. Jiva Swarupai Krishna Nityadas. That's true. But if someone is envious, we can't preach to him. We can't mingle with him intimately. So, and Mayavadis, a real Mayavadi is envious of Krishna. So when I say Dr. Patel was a devotee at heart, I mean he wasn't really envious. But sometimes he would talk like a Mayavadi and it would sound like he was envious. But I think at heart he wasn't really envious. And if he were, Prabhupada wouldn't have had that relationship with him. All right, so we have a break now. A break means, what does that mean? A break means we have free time to chant and hear about Krishna, associate with devotees, and serve the deity. Doesn't mean we're taking a break from Krishna consciousness. We're just taking a break from the scheduled activities in the temple to allow us to think of Krishna and serve Krishna in our own chosen ways. Thank you very much.